listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Boy, let me tell you, it's been something of a 24 hours for me personally in the world of miles and points, and we'll get to that in just one second. But if you're tuning in, I would absolutely love it if you would share the show with a friend. That's what helps us grow the audience each and every week. And if you have questions or guests that you'd like to see on the show, shoot me an email, ed@pizzainmotion.com. And you can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you find great podcasts. So about that crazy 24 hours. And okay, one more thing. Just so you know what's coming up, we've got Jen stopping by today to talk about a great discount from Airbnb. Even if you're not staying in Airbnb, they can help you save on a tour with your next vacation or an experience. And Seth is stopping by from PaxX.Aero to talk about big changes in Tokyo in terms of how you're going to be getting there in the future. So, the short version, because the long version would take more than the whole show, is that about 24 hours ago from the recording of this, I tried to make a change to an award ticket that I have for our family for an upcoming family vacation. And after a total of just about 9 hours on the phone, I am short about 120,000 United miles, and had to take a downgrade on three of our tickets versus what was promised to us by a supervisor. This was over the course of four phone calls. I spoke to, if my math is right, 11 different employees so far. And you know, I don't say all this because I'm trying to, you know, complain or create a platform for somebody to hear my gripes. It's to say that, like I was saying on the Award Travel 101 podcast just a couple weeks ago, when Richard Kerr was having problems, you know, if after, you know, 9 hours on the phone and 11 different people, I can't get my miles back, I wonder what happens to just the normal everyday Joe or Jane, if it were somebody who's, you know, traveling a few times a year, they've been saving up their miles, they're ready for their super duper vacation, and then something goes wrong and they can't fix it. And you know, I worry about this because I feel like I hear from folks who say, tried to redeem my miles, something happened and I just gave up. You know, those miles and points are just a scam. And all I can say is that even after that entire experience, I'm still bullish on miles and points. I may not be as bullish on United, but that's a separate story. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the final two pennies, but for now, just wanted to share that little tidbit with you over the past 24 hours and tell you that I'm really looking forward to bringing you this segment from Jen and Seth this week. So without further ado, let's get to Jen and Airbnb experiences. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with Jen from Deals We Like for another deal segment. And if you guys know from listening, I'm not a huge Airbnb fan and the various variations of it. But Jen wrote a post recently about Airbnb experiences, which, much to my surprise, doesn't actually require staying at an Airbnb. Right, Jen?
That's right. Yes. So Airbnb has an Airbnb experiences part of their site. And it seems to be as like local folks will, you know, if you're a tour guide or you run some sort of boat tour or whatever it is, you can put your service up on Airbnb. And just like Airbnb homes run, people can then go ahead and reserve via Airbnb that experience or excursion for the day or a few hours or multiple days, whatever the actual experience may be. And right now there's a promotion with Airbnb and MasterCard that you'll receive $25 off of a experience that costs $50 or more, which is pretty good. I mean, a lot of the experiences run around that $50 price point. I mean, obviously, you know, some are $10, some are $200. But I actually found it to be a great way to save some money on an upcoming trip to Lisbon. So we were looking for a tour in Sintra for the day. And with two little kids, a lot of the group tours just aren't ideal. They also don't take little kids. So a private tour was necessary. And using this promo code, we were actually able to use two different accounts and, you know, do some magical work around here to get take advantage of that promo code multiple times and get our private tour guide. So it really saved us a good amount of money. And I'm really excited for our tour too. I feel like it's a good way to find out, you know, different things to do in a new city or even, you know, staycation your own city and then also save money along the way. So I'm really excited about it and I can't wait to write about the experience afterwards.
So at some point, I guess they'll give you instructions on where to meet the tour guide and all that, since you're obviously not going to an Airbnb. And I think it's I think this is a great great. I think the thing that I see when these sorts of things come up is that people don't pay enough attention to the sorts of cards they have in their wallet. And so this one, as you mentioned, ties into MasterCard and their quote unquote priceless program. And, you know, buyer beware, as, you know, as Jen said, the code for this one says that the promo is supposed to expire on April 30th, but she did just have no problem using it, just last week. So seems to still be working. And you do have to have a MasterCard in your wallet, but, you know, for most folks, they're going to have one of those rolling around in there. Jen, have you been given any instructions on what happens next?
Yeah. So I actually was able to message with a guy, the tour guide. Actually, there was a few different tours that I was looking at. So I messaged with all of them via the Airbnb messenger, you know, option. They all responded back quickly. Like, I needed to know if there was car seats and some other various questions I had. Are they going to pick me up in my hotel? Am I going to meet them? And then the one that kind of worked out best, I just went ahead, reserved, and I've been in communication with them prior to and then afterwards. So it's a pretty cool tool. I'm liking it a lot. And I feel like it's more secure because the person I went with had like 160 reviews. Of course, like normal Airbnbs, there's ones with no reviews because they're just starting, just getting into it. And sometimes you can get better pricing that way too because they need to build up their credibility.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, if you are looking for an experience in a faraway land or even a near land, there's this $25 discount off of $50 or more through Airbnb experiences, something that I would not have even thought to look at until Jen brought it to my attention, which is why I love having these conversations with other folks, because I'm always learning more about the world of travel, just like you guys are. Jen, thanks a bunch for being on again this week. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me.
Absolutely. You can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com, or send me an email, dealswelike@gmail.com, or any of the social media outlets, anything at dealswelike.
Thanks a bunch, Jen. Safe travels. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. You too.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. This week's show is brought to you in part by AutoSlash. AutoSlash does one thing really, really well. They save you money on car rentals, and not just a little bit. They're always free to use, and there's two separate ways that they can help save you money. First off, if you start your booking process at autoslash.com, you'll enter in some key information, Costco membership, AAA, frequent flyer memberships, and they'll take all that information along with searching for any publicly available codes that you might not be aware of, and they'll find the best price for your specific car rental, which you can then go ahead and book. After you've booked, you can enter your car rental reservation into their tracking tool, and it will continue to track whether the price has gone down on your car rental or a new code becomes available that would save you more money. They'll notify you, and you'll be given the chance to rebook that reservation for less money. Even if you don't start the booking process with AutoSlash.com, if you booked it somewhere else, you could take your reservation number, key it into AutoSlash, and they will continue to track that reservation for free and let you know if the price goes down or if there's a discount code maybe you didn't know about right up until you pick the car up. Tons of different ways to save money with AutoSlash. It's 100% free, always 100% free. Give it a try and drop me an email. Let me know what you think about it. You can find them at autoslash.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with frequent guests Seth Miller of PaxX.Aero, Wandering Aramean, Dots, Lines, and Destinations, and a whole bunch of other stuff that I can't remember. Hey, Seth, welcome back.
Hey, I can't remember most of them either, so you're not alone there.
Perfect. I am sure I am not alone when it comes to those things. And I am not alone in wondering what is going to happen with all of these new flight approvals for service to Tokyo's Haneda Airport. And just to set this up for folks who may not be familiar, the reason why this is significant is twofold. First is Haneda, as compared to Tokyo's other major airport, Narita, is located in better proximity to the downtown core area of Tokyo, and in certain instances also provides better connecting flow elsewhere in the region. But up until recently, the U.S. did not have great access into Haneda. Is that a good summary?
That is a very good summary, yeah. Haneda, when they built Narita Airport, which is sort of 70 miles away out in the countryside northeast of town, sort of similar to your Dulles DCA or LaGuardia JFK situation, they limited flights at the downtown airport to force more of the operations out to the bigger, more open area that was not going to affect local noise and pollution and all those other things. And in the intervening years have realized that partly just due to incredible growth demand and partly just because people don't really like going out to Narita, it was necessary to open Haneda back up. And so in advance of the Olympics that are coming up in Japan, they're slowly expanding the volume of traffic that can fly from long-haul international destinations into Haneda. And there's a lot of politics and whatnot behind it. But the short version is that in February, the U.S. and Japan announced that 12 additional slot pairs or 12 new flights, daily flights, would be allowed into Haneda. And the four airlines, American, Delta, Hawaiian, and United, applied for 19 of those 12 slots.
As was expected, that there would be more demand than supply, although demand from the airlines does not necessarily translate to demand from customers, which I think we're going to find out. And rewinding just a bit, when you compare Narita and my home airport of Dulles, we can at least say that the planners in the D.C. area intelligently connected Dulles to downtown D.C. using rail and other, efficient public transit methods in an expeditious fashion.
I was wondering where you're going with that for a second, but I was like, no, you meant to start with Narita there. No. Honestly, I've flown through Narita many, many times, enough times, and gone into Tokyo several of them. I don't mind. It's about an hour on the train. You can get it down to 30 or 40 minutes on the high-speed train if you're willing to pay a little extra and you're going to one of the stations that the Narita Express serves. But I never found it like grossly debilitating in terms of inconvenient. It might be more analogous to moving most of New York's operations to Stewart up in Newburgh.
Yeah.
In terms of distance away from everything. And that had been teased for a while with building a proper high-speed rail link and some new highways and like expanding that airport because the other three city airports were overwhelmed with traffic. But anyway, here we are.
Yeah, and in this case, the one thing I think I don't know, and then we'll dig into the, who won what and what we think could happen with capacity, but, how close to Haneda, how close to full do you think Haneda is with these slot additions?
I think there's still room for Haneda to grow or at least to shift things around. One of the challenges, like with many busy international airports, is what time airlines want to fly. And so with these daytime slots, it's a little, they're better timed for connections. They're better timed for passengers not being mad about a 2 a.m. departure, things like that. The subway, the monorail there that everybody loves because it's super convenient for transit in and out of downtown, does not run 24 hours. So there's a lot of little things like that that make the daytime slots more valuable and better for the U.S. airlines. At the same time, there's not an infinite supply of daytime slots. And part of that is the laws and the negotiations between the countries. Part of it is just the fact that like it's not just flights to the United States. There's flights to lots of other places, in and out, domestic flights. There's flights within Asia. There's flights to Europe. So there's, I think, maybe Australia has a Haneda now. So there's a lot of other flights that also have to balance within those times. So it's a pretty full airport, and getting viable, commercially viable departure times is going to be part of the challenge for all these 12 new operations. And, that was one of the things that I think American put in one of their applications, was like, we understand that the timing from the slots is hard. And so if we have to move things around, we will, but we still want this, when taking a half step back here, when they applied for the new routes, the airlines all said what time of day they wanted to fly.
Right.
And that's part of the approval process. And it's sort of them, their best guess of when they think they can get slots from the Japanese authorities. And so one of Americans said, you know, this is where we think we'll get, but if they won't give us that one, we'll move it somewhere else. We just really want the slots.
For sure. And I think, you know, I had thought before these announcements were impending, I had thought that Haneda was already pretty full, which is also some of the appeal for the U.S. carriers is to get better connecting flow. Specifically, Delta's mentioned that a number of times. And it's sort of like the inverse proportion to why the airlines applied for these routes. As folks who like to travel the world, I sort of sit here and think about my listeners and, you know, you and I, and you know, like, hey, like we want to get to Tokyo, but we also want to get to all the places beyond that you can get connecting in Haneda. So from our standpoint, when we look at Delta, United, American, and then to a slightly lesser degree, Hawaiian, you know, I'm looking at these flights thinking, all right, which one of these are likely to either A, be the least popular or take the longest to ramp up, i.e. these are the flights that we should be targeting for potential bountiful award inventory.
And so what I will say there is Delta, as you mentioned, talking about connection stuff, Delta does not have a partner in Japan. Delta used to be its own partner in Japan in the Northwest days, where they ran a hub at Narita,
yeah,
and would fly 747s in from Minneapolis and Seattle and Detroit and drop everybody off and then connect onward to Manila, to Singapore, to Hong Kong, to China. They had a ton of operations there. So I think they did Seoul also. Like it was, they legit ran it as a hub. And in the, that was sort of ramping down as the merger time happened for Delta Northwest. Since then, Delta has completely stripped it down. And they actually, as an airlines go, they got the most slots. Delta picked up 5 of the 12. And it would appear, based on that acquisition of these slots, Delta will no longer operate at Narita as of spring 2020, which is a massive shift. But it's been sort of the writing on the wall for some time. We've seen them drawing down their connecting flow. The only onward connections they have right now are Singapore and Manila. And I think that those are going away. They can't connect them from Haneda because they don't have slots. And there's just not enough volume of traffic coming in that isn't overflying Tokyo. And, you know, Delta, when they could start flying nonstop to China, they stopped connecting people via Tokyo. When they started flying nonstop to Hong Kong, they stopped connecting people via Tokyo. Then they stopped flying nonstop to Hong Kong. So that's a both a good and bad example. But you know, there is no nonstop to Manila, so that'll be an interesting one to see how that plays. But I can't imagine that Delta really want, when they put in their application, they've made it clear over the years that they want to consolidate all their operations at Haneda.
Right.
And I can't imagine that this is going to remain a split operation at this time.
No, I don't think it will. And so that's sort of what I balance. You know, like I looked at the Atlanta flight and started thinking, you know, gosh, you know, that could be one that that potentially ends up with inventory. But the more I thought about it, and not Atlanta specifically or not specifically, but it was more of, I do expect that they will move stuff over from Narita. And so I haven't done the math on, okay, so in theory, we've got 5, you know, wide bodies flying from Atlanta, Detroit, Honolulu, Portland, Seattle, but they're replacing flights that are already going to Narita. So in some cases, you know, this may not be that big of a capacity increase for Delta.
Yeah, definitely not. And Delta is mostly using smaller planes than American or United will. So in a total capacity sense, it's also not a huge growth play. You know, when we talk about, as you mentioned earlier, some of the where the glut of capacity is going to be and where we can start looking for award space, I think there's two places to look, and those are Los Angeles and Honolulu. Today, American and Delta each operate a Los Angeles Haneda flight. In spring 2020, American gets another one and United gets one. And right. United has indicated that it will, both actually American and United have indicated they will be additional flights not moving existing Narita service. So that's an increase in capacity going to Tokyo from LA. And it's that LA to Asia is already a highly competitive market. I mean, we see it going to China as well. There's a lot of capacity there, and they're historically, in the recent history, the last 18 to 24 months, there have been a huge smattering of, you know, $400 round trip LA to China or beyond tickets that come up every now and then. At that point, I mean, this may be like heresy to your listeners or to you, but like, screw the points, just buy the ticket.
Right.
Or use your Chase Ultimate Rewards from your Chase Sapphire Preferred or Reserve that are 1.5 cents each, and that's a $25,000 round trip ticket to Asia.
Right.
Dollar. 25,000 points. It's a much better deal than $25,000, excuse me.
It is a much better deal than $25,000, no question. But I agree that those prices have been a bit crazy, and so seeing that some of those are additions, you're absolutely right, should continue to put pressure there. And I do think Hawaii is another market that continues to see pressure. I just, you know, on that one specifically, I'm, you know, as an East Coast guy, I'm not.
Oh yeah. Terribly useless for all of us.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm just saying, if you ask me where the award seats are going to be, I think that's it.
Yeah.
And so in Hawaii, Delta picked up one.
Right.
Hawaiian picked up one.
Right.
And so that's two additional flights, plus starting, I don't know when this episode's coming out, but starting next week from when we're recording it, the A380 starts to fly for ANA between Tokyo and Honolulu.
That's right. I'd forgotten that.
And then a second one, and then a third one. So the capacity lift increase in between Honolulu and Tokyo is going to be very significant in the next 12 months. And anytime capacity increases that much, I think is a good opportunity to look for great sale, either cash fares or award inventory.
For sure. And so what I would say for folks, especially if you're East Coasters like myself and Seth, and you have free time on your hands, where the Honolulu thing could come into play is some sort of a quasi around the world itinerary with points, or as you say, with cheap fares, where you're stopping in Hawaii and then you're stopping in Tokyo, and then you're popping over to Europe from there, or you know, coming home from Tokyo. But there could be some interesting opportunities to pick up a couple of good stops, especially for folks like me who still have not made it to Hawaii.
Really?
Really?
All right.
We officially know that Seth doesn't listen to my podcast, because I get a ration of you know what from Summer and Leslie and a few other folks for not having made it there yet. It's one of the three states I've made it to, but, and I'll give you my 15-second argument, as I've given before. I can get to Italy in less time than I can get to Hawaii, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and I have been to many fancy Caribbean beaches. I've been to many nice Hawaiian beaches. I would go to the Caribbean for you for 6 hours away instead of 12 every time.
Well, and if you think about it too, like pull the 6 hour stops out of the way and just say, not that I think the Bahamas is great and wonderful, but with nonstop flights to the Bahamas, it's like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, it's a tough one to justify. And I know that Hawaii is a special place and that there's great things to see. And I'm not debating any of that. It's more just from the East Coast, especially folks with kids, almost all of those flights are going to be in a coach or a coach style seat.
Yep.
And they're almost always going to involve a red eye in one direction or the other, most likely coming back. And so, you know, that can be complicated with kids.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just am surprised you hadn't done it. That's all. I agree 100% with your arguments of having not been there. And, you know, you should at some point, but like I've been a couple times. I don't feel that it was life changing.
Yeah, I'm going to go, just like, you know, a lot of other places, and I do want to go, but just hasn't been high. So any last thoughts on the Haneda push, if you will, from the four U.S. airlines?
Yeah, I mean, since that's what we're theoretically talking about today, you know, I think it's interesting that United is adding two flights and then moving two. That's the biggest net add of capacity.
Yeah.
And they have their ANA connections both at Haneda and at Narita. And they're going to keep those up. American, similarly, is one net add and one move, I think, if I remember correctly. I think maybe both are adds. Actually, Dallas might be an add as well, rather than a move. But, you know, they have the JAL partnership. Interesting, Hawaiian also has a JAL partnership. So a lot of this is going to be about picking up onward connections in the area. As you described earlier, there's a lot within Japan, there's a lot onward into Asia that work very nicely. And you know, I think all in all, I actually had this discussion with Foz the other day on Dots Line, so it'll be a race to see which one comes out first and who wins and who bleeds which out what. But he was of the opinion that Delta getting at all of its requests and moving everything to Haneda is bad for consumers because the gateways on the US side aren't all that helpful relative to other gateways, and giving Delta sort of the advantage of being able to consolidate its operations was kind of a gift from the DOT.
Yeah, no, I haven't dug in enough to decide how I feel on that. They certainly feels like they came out ahead of the four carriers.
Sure. And not only did they got 5 of the 6 they asked for. So they had fewer denied than everybody else, in addition to more approved, which makes sense, obviously. But they do get the opportunity to consolidate their operations at a single airport. And I can't argue with their position that by having, by not having the local connections onward, they need to focus on O&D traffic. And that means Haneda. O&D meaning people flying nonstop to an origin or destination. So basically people going to Tokyo, not beyond. And so I get that. And in some ways, this is the DOT saying yes to be for these routes to be financially viable for you. Running a split operation in Japan is stupid. You can, in fact, consolidate everything at Haneda instead of having to run 3 and 3 across 2 airports. And so it's definitely a win for Delta in that sense. But I think it becomes, in some ways, a decent chance that that's a win for passengers, because I'll make the argument that they could control their costs better and not raise fares more to run the split operation. Now, they're an airline, and so they're going to raise their fares anyways and pocket the cash. But at least theoretically, there's a potential there.
Oh, that's so cute.
Isn't it, though?
Well, I think that's a perfect place to leave it with Seth's ideological view of Delta and pricing.
when you put it like that,
when you're not joined with me here, tell folks where they can track you down across the interwebs, as you old folks say.
As that we old folks say, anyway. So I'm at WanderMe, WANDRME on Twitter, or PAXEX, PAXEX dot AERO. More dots, more lines.com for the Dots, Lines, and Destinations podcast, and plenty of other places too, but those are the ones I can think of right now.
Thanks a bunch, man. Safe travels.
Thanks. Take care.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final 2 pennies, and hopefully you'll be able to find a way to use Airbnb experiences and that $25 discount code to save on a tour or another experience for a vacation you've got coming up this summer. Secondly, the big changes moving flights from Narita to Haneda in Tokyo should be interesting to watch. They're not all capacity increases, but some are, and so we've got to keep our eye out for some opportunities maybe to sneak over to Tokyo on a war and saver inventory. Haneda is also obviously a lot closer and should open up some connecting inventory that might not have otherwise been there. Big thanks to Jen and Seth for coming on this week. So wrapping up on my United adventure, it's obviously not done yet. I'm going to continue to push for those 120,000 miles. It's a lot of miles. It's just about enough for a round trip business class ticket to Europe, which comes at a pretty penny. So definitely going to keep pushing on that. But I think the thing to remember when these things come up is that we want to make sure that we vote with our wallets, because programs don't make changes based on one thing happening. They make changes based on trends. And so just like Richard over at Award Travel 101 seems to be voting with his wallet in terms of Marriott, I may take a serious look at what I'm going to do with my United business going forward. With all the problems that they've had with Wi-Fi over the course of the past couple of years, and with some of the service issues that popped up like this, it just makes me question if they should be getting all of my business. And so I've already moved away flights where Wi-Fi was important and I could afford to take a different itinerary. And now I think I'll take an even harder look at which choices I'm making and that business I'm giving to them so that I can vote with my wallet. And where does that put you? Well, if you're smart and you're using a credit card that earns flexible currencies, whether that's Chase Ultimate Rewards or American Express membership rewards, if you're having trouble with a specific program, don't be afraid to move those points somewhere else next time. You have a lot of options. So just make sure that when the dust settles that you're not redeeming points for a substandard experience, if you will. There are a number of really solid hotel programs out there that you can transfer to, as well as a number of solid airline programs that you can transfer to. So don't feel like you're locked into just one. In a lot of cases, for frequent business travelers, you may be. You might be hub captive if you live in Minneapolis or, like me, near Washington Dulles. But just remember in the end that the program is only going to be as loyal to you as they need to be, and you may have to vote with your wallet. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. Again, a big thanks to Jen and Seth for stopping by to help make a great show. Big thanks to Mike, our producer. I've got a whole bunch of segments in the can that I can't wait to bring you guys. I've got Gilbert from God Save the Points. I've got Leslie from Trips with Tykes talking about Star Wars. Gary is going to be on talking about the Hyatt American Airlines partnership. All kinds of stuff to bring you guys in the coming weeks. If you've listened this far, I'm guessing that means you like the show, so I hope you'll take a moment to rate the show on whatever platform you're listening. And if there's a topic you want us to cover or a guest you'd like us to have on, make sure you email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com, or shoot me a note on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. Until we upload again, we've got miles to go.